Once upon a time, there were four little rabbits.
How old are you, Johnny? She asked.
16.
We few, we happy few, we band of brothers.
It was the best of times. It was the worst of times.
A wise old king once said, "Of the making of books, there is no end." How true today. Of the overabundance of writing published each year, what's worth reading? The answer is simple. Read only the best. Come join the discussion on Just the Best Literature.
Well, hello again, everyone. Thanks for listening in today. Well, I do have comments again today, and I'm so excited about it. And actually, I might have to do a little confession here. And the reason why I have so many comments all of a sudden is I was looking in the wrong location in my email, and I've actually found a lot. So some of these are older, but they've never been read on the radio. So it says, "Hey, JBL, I'm enjoying your series on Charles Krauthammer. I've read a few books in my life, but I've always preferred doing my reading in small bits and chunks, like in magazines, encyclopedias, chapters in histories, etc. Mr. Krauthammer's essays are just my size. My favorite books are Roger Angeli's collections of observations written about spring training in the World Series, and James Herriot's All Creatures Great and Small," and of course that was his series of memoirs. In the latter, there are many memorable repeating characters, but each chapter is a complete story in its own right. So please keep up the good work, Mr. Leap. So there's someone else that probably knows me, but didn't give me their name. So here's another comment. This goes back to our programs on the universe that we talked about from Krauthammer. He says, "Dear JBL, scientists, for being so brilliant, are actually pretty dumb. First, they paint themselves into a corner by accepting the theory of evolution as gospel, dismissing the possibility of God without even a second thought. This means they cannot even begin to appreciate the beauty and precision of God's creation, believing that it all came about randomly. Next, they're arrogant. They view Isaac Newton, probably the most brilliant scientist of all time, as well a boob, because Newton believed in God. I doubt that any of them are smarter than the guy who does the repairs on their car, let alone smarter than Isaac Newton. Keep up the good work, Mr. Leap." So again, thank you for those comments. I don't know who you are, but that's okay. Well, the last time Grant and I we got into this essay by Charles Krauthammer titled "Cold War Nostalgia." The actual title of these programs are "Charles Krauthammer Bemoans Cold War Nostalgia." So the last time we really got into, let's say, the Democrat and the liberal thinking, you know, about certain events that are going on in this world. And you're going to have to go back and listen to that, because I don't want to go back and reinvent that wheel. But we're going to go ahead and continue. We were talking about Bill Clinton and President Bill Clinton when, you know, he made more than one debacle in his presidency. And, of course, Krauthammer calls him to task on it. Now, we were just really on the first page. That's page 281. And we were just really on that first page. But we ended the program last time by saying that Clinton said that during the Cold War era, he said we had an intellectually coherent thing in the Cold War era. And, of course, you know, Grant and I talked about that, and that it really wasn't true at that time. But then Krauthammer comes back, and he also says, the American people knew what the rules were, and we did whatever. Now, I think that sounds so familiar to the liberal politicians today. You know, they're looking back at something that they hated, and yet they said we knew what the rules were. Well, they don't know what the rules are today, you know. So
Bill Clinton was acting like everyone, no matter what their political affiliation was, actually strongly supported the Cold War, was strongly opposed to the USSR, yet the liberals were really soft on the Soviets, and they actually, at that time, were pretty much holding up Soviet double agents as their heroes. They were being, academia was being infiltrated by Soviet spies at that time. Even professors in Harvard and other major institutions, and the liberals absolutely loved that. And to this day, they still hate Ronald Reagan with a passion, because Ronald Reagan actually stood up to the Soviets and caused them to collapse.
Yes. I think it's interesting that here at PCG, and of course at the college, we've been talking, you know, about the communist war to infiltrate America. And of course, Mr. Armstrong saw that very early on. And when I go back and I read this history now, I think I was telling everyone in the last program, and maybe I've said this several programs, that I just really disliked politics growing up because my parents, my father was Republican, my mother was Democrat, and they were very well read. They were very much into their politics, and sometimes it wasn't very pretty. You know, they disagreed quite a bit, and so I thought, I want none of this. But I've since learned, actually, from this book, you know, how much I've missed by not really studying these things. And what's really absolutely, it's kind of thrilling to me now that here Mr. Armstrong was on top of this in the 50s and the 60s, that the communists were infiltrating, and they were actually infiltrating through the schools and the colleges. And you have these people out there that say they're Democrat, they say they're in the government, but they're actually communist in their thinking.
And that's the type of perspective we really need. Mr. Armstrong was inspired by God to understand the real threat there. And today, when the left says the same things about the right that the right says about the left, basically you're just going to believe whichever side you end up naturally inclined toward, mm-hmm. and you're just going to attack the other side just like opposing teams. You have to go against the rival team no matter what. You have to actually have God's perspective.
Right.
You have to have a basis and a foundation for truth, or else why not just believe whatever the left says instead?
Right. So I think it's – I want to just go back to another quote here on this very first page of this essay. We're going to have to move on, and we're never going to get through this essay. But the point is, he is a master at really going after Clinton. I mean, Clinton thought, wow, we have this intellectually coherent thing with the Cold War. And then he asked him a question, and I think this is a poignant question. Now you have to remember, he's not sitting with them in a radio booth. He's not sitting with them across the desk. He's writing to them through a newspaper, which I think is a masterstroke. And he says, well, his big question is, well, Bill, and he probably would never have called him that, but maybe he would have, well, President Clinton, how about when we did Vietnam? You know, because he knows what Bill Clinton thinks about Vietnam. You know, so he says, Vietnam fought under the theory of containment enunciated first by Harry Truman in 1947 and was the quintessential Cold War engagement. It was also the most divisive. Now, listen to why he asked that question to Bill. How about Vietnam? He goes on to say, at that time, Bill Clinton called it a war I opposed and despised with a depth of feeling I have reserved solely for racism in America. Okay, why does he bring up Vietnam? Why? Because it's still the Cold War.
Right.
You know, it's they called it the proxy Cold War. But what was really going on in Vietnam? Now, again, my wife, who's just a little bit older than I am, and just a few years, but she was in college when I was in high school, and she went to some liberal colleges, and guess what the rage of education was at that point? The Vietnam War. So she said, when she read the essay, she says, oh, I know a lot about this. And of course, I had to sit there and say, well, I don't know what you're talking about here. But anyway, she said that's all that was being talked about in schools. She had it for 3 years, I think, all this discussion. And the point is, the war was really about South Vietnam did not want to go communist. But China and Russia were helping North Vietnam, and the whole idea then was containment. You know, that's why America got involved, because the theory of containment is, you know, you fight them and they'll eventually give up and they won't take over more territory. That was the idea of containment. And so the thing is, if he was so much wishing for a Cold War nostalgia, there's something wrong, because he said openly that he opposed and hated the Vietnam War with a depth of feeling I have reserved solely for racism. So I mean, there's checkmate.
That's
Charles Krauthammer just executed checkmate.
You know, just a brilliant point to make when the Vietnam War was part of what you could call the Cold War, because the Soviet Union and America never fought directly against each other, but they always backed opposing sides in different regions of the world. But if Bill Clinton hated this idea of going against the Soviets in Vietnam, then doesn't that mean he probably also disliked going against the Soviets in general? That's the whole point of this. Bill Clinton today, or at this time, was saying that he was totally pro-Cold War, pro-taking down the evil empire. But he really wasn't at all.
He really wasn't. No, he was communist.
Yeah.
Let's be honest. And he might come after me, but I doubt if he's going to listen to JBL. You know. but anyway, the thing that's interesting, my wife really brought this up, and again, for everybody out there, you probably need to review some of the history of the Vietnam War and really what was going on there. Now, the U.S. was involved from 1963 to 1973. And the U.S. policy was containment, because it was the USSR and China were supporting North Vietnam. South Vietnam did not want to be communist. And the thing that she said that she knows from all these classes she took, and my wife is not necessarily political. She never, you know, signed up Democrat, Republican, or anything like that. In fact, if she signed up for anything, it was independent. But the thing that the Democrats don't like to admit about the Vietnam War, and I thought this is really interesting, is that two very famous Democratic presidents actually accelerated America's involvement in it. And it was John Kennedy and it was Lyndon Johnson. They accelerated our involvement in it. And in fact, it was under Johnson that most of the protests came out. And so, but Democrats don't ever want to say that. You know, they don't even want to admit that happened. But they want to go after, you know, the Republicans that were involved. You know, and so you know, actually what president ended our, you know, our involvement in there was actually it began with Nixon. Because he made an agreement with North Vietnam that we would get out. We got out, and as soon as we got out, guess what? South Vietnam fell to the North, and they're communists now.
Yeah, and that just shows the failure of this idea of containment. I mean, they could have really tried to win an absolute victory.
Right.
But it was more like containment. That's in the word. It just means keep the communism in these specified areas and hope that it never spreads even after our troops leave. And that just is not realistic at all. And it's like the Democrats have never even thought about the idea of absolute, total, dominant victory.
Right.
Why not just wipe out the enemy?
Right.
When they're a threat to the whole world like that with communism, which, like Mr. Armstrong explained, is far beyond just an economic ideology, if it's something that's going to undermine and destroy America, the greatest nation in the world, then the proper retaliation should be to destroy it.
Right. And the thing is that that's where, again, I think Bible prophecy comes in, is that why does America take that stance? Why does it take a containment stance? It sounds good, but here, America is a superpower. You could knock those guys out with no trouble, and they still wouldn't do it. And again, why does America get caught in these things? And you know, as you know, we teach here from you know, the Key of David, and we teach it from the Trumpet Daily. We teach it through the, you know, the Philadelphia Trumpet Magazine. Is there's a prophecy that said that because of our nation's sins, God was going to break the pride of our power. So we're weak. And of course, you know, what happened with Clinton in the long run? He got in such an incredible scandal, and it's still coming back at him. You know, so the thing is, again, I think this is something that Charles Krauthammer couldn't even see. And you know, there's really a bigger picture even than Bill Clinton here. You know, it's a national problem. And I think that's what we need to see about it. But I still think Krauthammer, I mean, he was really a pretty courageous guy to even write this essay.
Yes, he really was. I mean, it just to go head on against the president like that, and especially because I'm sure he was surrounded in Washington, D.C. by a lot of hardcore Democrats, to actually speak the truth about this, to bring up history that everyone else wanted buried, even though he didn't know what we know about certain things regarding prophecy, just from the physical current events standpoint and the understanding of history, his insight in those realms outside of God's church really was unmatched.
Yeah. And of course, that's why we did. And that's why we've actually used a lot of his essays, because they are right on, you know. But here's what he goes on to say. This is, now we're on page 282, so we're actually moving through the essay. But at the top of the page, he says, Vietnam rent the nation because it presented the basic dilemmas of the Cold War period. Was containment the paramount American foreign policy goal? Was it worth the risk of military invasion? Where? At what cost? There were no easy answers. There was certainly none of the unanimity that nostalgics now pretend there was. There wasn't. And my wife will tell you, there was division. I mean, she experienced on her college campuses, you know, the division with people. And so the American, you know, culture, or the web, or the, you know, the web and the weep, and not the weep, the weave and the warp, you know, of America was being tattered, was being destroyed.
There's nothing wrong with just acknowledging that any war, any situation like this has a lot of different options. But I think what we're getting at is that to look at it in hindsight, like everything is so simple. The whole reason Bill Clinton was doing this was just to excuse himself from making a lot of wrong decisions all in a row in mm-hmm. different foreign policy arenas. He was making a lot of wrong decisions. It's okay. We all understand that it's a complicated scenario that you're dealing with, but just don't pretend like everything back in the past was so easy and that you were on the right side the entire time when you actually weren't.
Right.
And then we'll be fine. Then we won't have to criticize anything.
but see, it was the Democrats have always fought bipartisanship. They want to do it. They want to be in power. And, you know, the thing is that when he even talked about hating the war, he hated it as much as he hates racism. Come on. I get so sick of hearing them say, you know, President Trump's racist. You know, everybody's racist today. No matter if they don't like it, everybody's racist but them. You know, it's just really... You would think, you know, more Americans would see through it. Unfortunately, there's almost half the nation that doesn't.
Right, and that word racism, it almost causes half the country to just lose their minds. Like, they can't think logically anymore as soon as that gets brought up. The Democrats say they hate it so much, and yet they bring it up so much that it's like they're determined to never let racism die. It hardly exists anymore in this entire country. It's right. It's a fringe element of probably less than 10,000 people in the whole country who really have a hardcore racist ideology of any kind, and yet the Democrats would have you believe that every regular working American out there harbors these racist thoughts, and it's actually part of their DNA, like Barack Obama once said.
Yeah, it's just not even true. I think it's interesting that he goes on in the essay. This is at the second paragraph. He says, to hear the blather about Cold War consensus, one would think that the 80s never happened. At every turn on every issue for which there presumably was one simple knee-jerk anti-Soviet answer. And he talks about the MX, and that's the MX missile. And, of course, I think the Republicans actually won on that one because, you know, there was all that problems going on in Europe, and they wanted to help protect Europe from, you know, Soviet invasion. And this is, you know, not too long after World War II. And, boy, the Democrats, they did not want the MX missile, you know, and... you know, but they actually got it through, and it was kind of like, you know, keep the Soviets at bay. You know, it was there as like the deterrent. And of course, I think that's what's really good here is that you know, Charles Krauthammer points out this to me was really, really kind of shocking and revealing even to me. There's that whole quote there. Maybe I could read the middle part. It says, he goes on to say, in the late 70s, for example, the Soviets aggressively deployed medium-range Euro missiles designed to intimidate and neutralize Western Europe. It was a clear-cut challenge. The correct response was equally clear-cut, a NATO counter-deployment of comparable medium-range missiles. Now, notice he says, Reagan, Thatcher, and Kohl, that's, you know, U.S., that's the, you know, England, that's Germany. They pulled it off, but not without enormous resistance from Western liberals and leftists. And the thing is, these liberals didn't see that the enemy was Soviet Union. They said the real enemy was what? Nuclear weapons. And we hear that today. You know, the real problem is nuclear weapons. It's not the Soviet Union.
And they want to make sure that everyone in the world gets rid of their nuclear weapons. Eventually, the way they say to start is by the U.S. getting rid of theirs first. Just an incredibly naive approach that's impossible to put into actual practice without ending in the destruction of your nation. So
the Soviet Union is still our enemy.
Right.
China is still our enemy. You know, I mean, they are our enemies. And what people are going to have to face here really soon is Germany is our enemy.
And it does seem like they are extremely tolerant of those nations. I mean, the liberals only turned on Russia when they saw the opportunity to attack Mr. Trump and pretend like Russia helped him steal the 2016 presidential election. Before that, you know, Barack Obama and Mitt Romney were debating for the presidency, and Mitt Romney called Russia the greatest threat in the world to America. And Barack Obama said that he was way outdated in his beliefs. He didn't want to view Russia as a threat. Joe Biden is extremely tolerant of China, and it seems like there's a lot of corruption there right now. Germany, like I said, gave Bill Clinton the Charlemagne Prize. They love Bill Clinton, and they hate Mr. Trump because he conquered a Clinton to win the White House. So you can just see the liberals are way, way, way too close to all of the enemies that the Bible says are going to cost us dearly.
Right, right. You know, there are lovers and we pay them. But anyway, honestly, you know, this isn't trying to be braggadocious. There's only one source people can go to right now for the right news, and that is the Philadelphia Trumpet. That is the Trumpet Daily. I know it's just been so great to have the Trumpet Daily every day. It's like, to me, it's like a cup of sanity in the morning. You know, it's like, okay, there is really sanity out there, you know. And, you know, it's just, I mean, in some ways, you just get so tired of, you know, what you hear on the news. I mean, we decided we're only going to watch one Fox News program a night, because there for a while when this all got started, we were watching three, and I'm thinking, I can't sleep tonight because I've got all this stuff in my head, you know, before we go into bed. But the thing is, I think the one of the things that's so important about this essay is it just shows that I think what's really been going on in America for a long time is finally getting exposed. And it's there, and of course, you know, I'll just stand up on my faith and say it. I believe God is exposing it, and the reason He's exposing it, it's like He wants us to see the fruits of our sin. This is what it is. You know, every one of us have sinned, and then we've been responsible. And you know, it gets down to the point that only Christ can solve this now.
Right,
it's unsolvable.
Yeah, this essay really exposes communism and how the left is extremely sympathetic toward it.
Yeah.
And, I mean, you do have to have that perspective that the church is able to provide whenever it presents the news. I've noticed anytime I try to read more than a couple articles from a different source outside the church, I do get agitated by what's going on. We have to have that right focus.
Right.
We have to know what it's all coming to, or else it's just too frustrating to even keep up with.
Yeah. Here's the thing that you're seeing right now happening. And he said this in 1993. This is at the bottom of page 282. It says, similarly on the other great Cold War issue, the Third World Revolution, the real enemy the Democrats protested was not communism, but deprivation. In the great debates over El Salvador and Nicaragua, liberals insisted that to see these conflicts in Cold War East-West terms was again to miss the point. You know, it's not the Soviets the problem. The problem is deprivation. And, you know, the thing is, even as being brought on in Trump Daily, that's what the liberals see now. And they are in their fantasy world with all of the stimulus money going out while these people are deprived. We need to give them more money. Who is going to pay for that money? Who's going to pay it back? And I even said to one of my relatives, I'll be careful how I say this, I said, stimulus money, our grandchildren and their children have to pay it back. And they said, well, who cares? I'm thinking, did I come from the same mother and father that you came from? You know, it's like I have 11 grandchildren and they're going to be stuck paying for this. You know, so the real enemy is deprivation, and we have heard that so much.
Well, that's how they excuse criminal behavior, and even now they're trying to let criminals out of prison so they don't catch the virus in prison. I mean, they just act like, oh, well, if these people had just received more government benefits throughout their lives, we had this big government structure in place to support them throughout their lives, they would have never turned out this way. So actually, it's all our fault. All the taxpayers, it's our fault that anyone ever decides to do something bad, apparently.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's really crazy. He goes on to say, he said, there would be nothing for the Soviets to exploit. In other words, if there weren't these other Central American problems, they wouldn't be able to exploit it if the people weren't deprived. He said, but unless the opposite conditions change, that region will continue to seethe with revolution, with or without the Soviets. And so the thing is, he goes on now and he talks about towards the end, he said, the evil empire at one time was the enemy. That was the central tenet of American Cold Warriors. Liberals deplored such talk as crude Manichaeism. In other words, there's a dark side and there's a kind of like a light side, or you know, it was black and white, or there was a, you know, spiritual brightness and there's spiritual darkness. But today, Grant, no one believes anymore that the Soviet Union is the dark side. they don't believe it.
Right, and that's the challenge that American leaders have. I mean, obviously every situation has certain things you have to consider, but at least Mr. Trump seems to understand who has been wronging the U.S. for many years, who has been ripping us off in these different deals.
And he's been ridiculed for saying it.
Right. And
I mean, he was on to China for years, and they've ridiculed him, you know.
And now everyone agrees with him.
Now, yeah. And the thing is, don't call it Wuhan. Don't call it the Wuhan virus. You know, well, the Chinese people will be offended. Yeah, it looks like the Chinese people wanted to kill everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's still more to come out about that. But I do think we're going to run out of time here. But I don't want to miss this one statement. This is really great. This is in close to the bottom of page 283. And this is really sarcastic, but he's really hitting Bill Clinton and all the liberals at the same time. He says, the golden age when everything was easy and we all joined hands in the Cold War battles of Vietnam and Nicaragua and the Euro missiles. He said, now, to me, that's funny. He said, you know, it's like kumbaya, like we're all singing together. None of that ever happened. The liberals were always fighting.
And that was like some of the greatest division the country's ever had back in the 70s and 80s. Yeah. All these revolutions going on socially because you have the hippie radical left that's just tearing down all kinds of morality. And then you just have the other side that doesn't want these radical changes to take place. Obviously, there was plenty of division. And that was also true in the Cold War, where there was one side that wanted to take down the enemy and the other side wanted to be best friends with them.
Yeah. Yeah. He goes on at the very end. I think we ought to read this last chapter, this last verse, or not verse. It's almost like this is a religious essay. But that last paragraph says, yesterday, cold warrior was a liberal epithet. Today, everyone pretends to have been one. My father, who had a Frenchman's appreciation for cynicism, had a term for this kind of after-battle resume revision. Now, I cannot pronounce the French. I think it's Marquis d'après-guerre, and it means resistance fighter post-war. So anyway, I think that's a fantastic way to end this. And so, again, we are out of time we have for today's program. But now, next time, Mr. Grant Turgeon has agreed to come back with me, and we're going to discuss another Charles Krauthammer essay, and we'll probably be ending this series with those two. So remember, we are reading selected portions of Charles Krauthammer's book of essays titled Things That Matter. Now, there's still a little bit more to come, and I just want to say, if you haven't bought this book, you need to buy it for yourself and spend the time with it and then research it and study it, because it's really going to get you up to date on what's happening in the world today, especially here in America. Now, you can buy this book at Amazon.com. You can find a used copy of the book at abebooks.com. And, of course, you can also check your local library. Please write me any comments you may have to jbl@pcog.org. You can follow JBL on Twitter at JBLiterature1. You can also follow JBL on Facebook. Simply search for Just the Best Literature. So, until next time, keep reading.
You've been listening to Just the Best Literature on Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG, streaming online at kpcg.fm and thetrumpet.com.